Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about visualization. Yes, we're going to think about, well, we're going to think about the future, really, because that's what visualization is. Even if we're thinking about the past and how things could have been done better, that's still thinking about the future because we're thinking about, last time I did it this way, but let's visualize the new way that we're going to do it in the future so that we don't have the same results, right? Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do we as leaders need to visualize? What do we as leaders need to visualize? Thank you for all being here. We've got lots of folks. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. I think the first thing we're going to talk about is visualizing the end of the process, visualizing the outcome, right? Yeah. And then also we're going to talk about kind of a separate, because it is separate, visualizing each step in the process, because that's more as we go along, we modify. The outcome is the big picture. Visualize what our ideal outcome would be, what we would like. And then visualize how we're going to get there step by step. And as we're doing it, of course, because we don't just visualize, we don't just think about things at the beginning and then go, well, we've thought about that. No, as this is a progressive thing, as we are negotiating, as we are talking, as we are consensus building, we always visualize why and what's going to happen if this takes place, right? Yeah. Yes, good point. I'm going to call this reactions, because what you're thinking about is how someone else is going to respond to whatever it is you're about to do or say. Mm-hmm. Reactions of our participants, those are the people in our group. Reactions of the employer. Remember, on this show, we use employer as a completely generic term. It does not necessarily indicate employment. It is whoever it is or whatever. It could be a board or an organization. But it is whoever it is that you are talking to, kind of answer to, even if you're not making actual reports, and whoever it is that had the good sense to bring us in as leader. We're going to call them the employer. Whoever it is that had the good sense to bring us in as leader is the employer, right? Right. So we have to look, we think about the reaction and visualize the reactions of our employer. Yeah, how about the opposition? A lot of times there is opposition. Just because we think something's a good idea doesn't mean that everybody else does, right? Sometimes there's other groups. Sometimes they're kind of not exactly opposition. They're working for the same basic goal, but they have different ideas about it. Does that make them opposition? Well, no, not really. They're not against the outcome that we're in favor of, but they really visualize something completely different, right? And we have to think about their reactions, too, to what we're doing, right? Yeah. In fact, maybe we could get together with the other group. I have to think about that in a minute. How about the media? The media is public opinion. Media forms public opinion, in my opinion. But they tell the public what they think the public should think. And the public being, well, not real free thinkers usually accepts it. So whatever the media says is kind of public opinion too. And the media is swayed by public opinion. They take surveys and stuff all the time. so that they appeal to the people who will then buy their product advertised like that. Yeah. And what do we need to visualize? In general, the impact of our actions and decisions, right? The impact. What's going to happen if we do this, if we take this action, if we make this decision, what's going to happen, right? We have to visualize the impact. Yes, we're going to get into that in more detail. So now we know what we need to visualize. How do we visualize this? How are we going to do this? This seems, well, it seems big, right? Yeah. And it is big, of course, but we can handle it because we're going to break it down into what to do, right? The first thing we're going to need is some empathy, exactly. We're going to need some understanding. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yeah? Yes. And yes, we are indeed going to break out our 5W questions. We can say them here, but we're going to deal with it in more detail when we get to that section of the show. There we go, because we want to get our topics down. Yes, we're going to get empathy by thinking about our 5W questions, because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Yes, you can think about those while we think about other things. In order to visualize properly, we have to set aside preconceptions. Maybe our own, right? And we have to have empathy now, we have understanding, and we know the preconceptions, the preconceived notions of others. Yes, and sometimes they're quite strong, and they look kind of like, really? To us, but they make perfect sense to the owner of them. So you have to think about that. In order to visualize, we're going to research all the sides because we want to know what it is that we're dealing with. We want to know everything so that we don't get some nasty case of unintended consequences, which is why we're going to be inclusive, and we are going to go seek some expert opinion before we make a final decision. I always do it. I like to know that we haven't accidentally misplaced something. We haven't accidentally not understood something because we plain ordinary didn't know it existed. I like to bring in an expert, even if we've got this, because I want them to look over it and then not go, oh, my God, you forgot. Oh, gee, we didn't know. And they're going to have unintended consequences unless we factor that in. Yeah, much better to invest in a fabulous expert to begin with and to try to get one later. Pardon me, took a sip of water. My goal is always to not make the mistakes so we don't have to fix them. Yeah, exactly. Don't make mistakes. We don't have to fix them. So let's visualize as a leader. We're going to visualize the end of the process, right? Yes. Hussein and others are saying that oftentimes there's multiple scenarios to achieve the same end. We've all been there. There's different ways. In fact, there's maybe different groups that all have their own way that they've got a concept of. And we want to do the thing that is, well, the smartest, the most expedient, the one that's going to really have the best impact. Is the key to this. And we want to be able to do that, so we're going to really visualize the various scenarios, and then we're going to decide, maybe as a group, maybe as, first thing we're going to do is we're going to define success, right? Yeah. Because that's the end of the process, is success. And the question is, who defines the success? Who defines what it is that we want and kind of gives an idea of how we're going to get there? Well, leader really does how we're going to get there. But we need to have a definition, and who's going to make it? Is it us? Do we decide what success looks like? Might be. Especially as you get more experience, people trust you to do that. I do it a lot. It might be the group as a whole, the participants. You might do it in a democratic manner, right? It might be the employer. In fact, it often is. They've got an agenda. Remember, employer is a generic term. But whoever brought you in might have kind of an agenda of what they want to see, what they want to see done, right? Yeah. And it's very important to know that. Very important to understand that that's what's taking place, for one thing, right? Yes. So you might have an agenda. You might have one. Yes, leader, this is true too. Participants, everybody might have an agenda. Might be competing ones. That's why as we get along in this discussion, we're going to talk about empathy. So we gain some understanding of how come you're here, which is really the crux of the matter, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Who defines success? Maybe public opinion does. Maybe circumstances. Maybe the media, which forms public opinion, but it's also swayed by it. It's not in a vacuum. Because sometimes there's competing media, competing information, and someone will switch sides when they see that it's more popular, reasonable is something that people use as an excuse to change sides. I didn't understand that, now I do. Really, it's more complicated than that usually. And it has to do with finances and prestige and reputation and like that. So you have to understand that it might be because something is right. But what determines right is a lot of, like, truth. Sometimes has a lot of factors to it, right? Yeah. Because people have different ideas of what is true, what is correct, what is right. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, everybody has input in defining success because we need to do it together so we can work together on it, right? Yeah. And even if word comes down from on high from the employer as to what they want, you have to explain to them that it's early in the process to have that definite an opinion, right? Yeah. Now, sometimes what we want is easier because it's obvious. We all want something to be legalized. We want this law to be changed so that it can be legalized. How is the concept? But the definition of success is relatively clear. Sometimes it is not. Sometimes we have to really think about what it is that we want, right? Yeah. This is a good point. Muhammad and others are saying that you also always need to have some contingency plans. As we get into it, if this is not the right path, if this is not going to work for one reason or another, sometimes because of something that we didn't realize at the start, but now we do, and we go, I don't think so. We need some contingency plans. We need another way of doing it. We need to talk about it, right? Yeah. In advance. People are asking if you make a contingency plan kind of in advance when you first start out. I'm going to say, took a sip of water. I'm going to say it depends on the complexity. It depends on whether the definition of success is very well defined or it's kind of not. You need more. And how fast you have to react is the other one. You need an actual pre-made, prepared, before things go bad, contingency plan. If something is very fluid, A, and something is complicated, and something is, And if things go bad, they're going to go fast, and you need to be right there with this is what we're going to do. Don't panic, right? Yeah. Some negotiations are like that. They've got a, this is what we're going to do, don't panic phase to them. That's what makes you the leader, because you never panic. Mm-hmm. Let's visualize the steps also, which is not just the end, it's everything, right? Yay, yes. Lee and others are saying that you need to celebrate each success. We like to do that over at Recipe for Peace Now. I think it's important. The reason being, not only because I like parties, but the reason being that you forget how far down you were. Because it seems to be taking a long time. It seems to be, oh my goodness, it's not, this isn't working. But yeah, it is. It's just that we're still in the step stage. We're still in the process stage, right? Yeah. So celebrate each success, even if it's not huge, but if it's a defined success, let's celebrate. We've gotten one notch closer, one step closer. Mm-hmm. Margaret and others are saying you may need to modify as you go forward. Ah, gee, pretty much always you have to modify as you go forward because circumstances crop up. Everything from funding, as in, oops, we don't have enough money to finish this, we need to get more, to outside circumstances, right? The law changes. Something shifts, right? Yeah. So, yes, you need to be flexible. And you need to let everyone know, including the employer and the media and everybody, that having to modify is part of the process and is not failure. Having to modify is part of the process. It's an important part of the process and is not failure. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true too. Margaret and others are saying that when circumstances change, so do the process steps. Kind of, maybe, depends. When circumstances change, so do the process steps. We try to fight forward always, and sometimes it is true the circumstances have changed, and for some reason we need to accommodate that. It affects us, and that will affect the process steps. You're right. Mm-hmm. Let's visualize other people's reactions. Let's think about, if I do this, what will he, she, the organization, whoever it is we're dealing with, the media, what will their reaction be? What will they do? What will they say? Let's visualize that, because it's important to think about how this is going to play out, how this is going to be received, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's do our participants first. How are we're gonna go a certain direction? How are they gonna be enthusiastic? The answer is yes, because you will model enthusiasm, and it's contagious. Just like being pessimistic is contagious, if you model enthusiasm and you show your group, you show your participants, your employer, the media, the public, the opposition, the groups that are kind of on your side but different. If you show everybody that you really think that this is going to make it, and you are a model of enthusiasm, and you keep abreast of visualizing what it is that's the next step, how people will react and like that, they will react favorably. And they will want to be on your team. Because they'll figure, well, if anybody can do it, Sue can do it. I've actually heard people say that. Anybody can do it, Sue can do it. Well, I suppose that's not complete endorsement, because it's not just Sue can do it. But sometimes things are complicated. And, yeah, we'll get a lot closer, and then we'll regroup and try again. Yeah, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. That a lot of people are talking about the employer, the reaction, because they set the guidelines. They do. They set the guidelines. They set up what it is that we want in a kind of a generic way, sometimes more specifically, come to think of it. What do you want is a perfectly good question to ask before you take on a leadership role. Because it's what's my goal? What do you want? What do you want to see as the outcome? If they can't answer that, you're going to have to do some work with them or else shy away. If the employer, remember, is generic, can't reasonably answer the question, what do you want? What outcome do you want to see? They're not ready to be led by you. We need to help them to determine the answer to that question. Or we need to run away. I mean, sometimes I see it and it's like, you're so far away. I'm the wrong person for this. Because they're not going to know that they've had a successful conclusion when they've had it. They're the kind of people that are always dissatisfied, always think something should have been done differently. What? They don't know. But somebody. Ugh, these people are bad for your reputation. Don't deal with them. Mm-hmm. Yes, they all need to know that circumstances change. Sure they do. And research tells us things. And we need to go forward and control the reactions by telling people how they're supposed to react. Isn't that funny? But think about it. That's what we're doing. We're helping people to have the right reaction so that they go forward with enthusiasm to work on it. Mm-hmm. Now, this is even true with the media, right, and with the opposition. I like to invite the opposition in. I do. I like to invite the employer in and the media. I run a very transparent ship. And I think that everybody should be a part of the process so they understand how we got there, right? And they understand that all viewpoints were looked at. And they understand that we came to the best possible reasoned decision that we could with the information at the time. Hey, that's our goal, right? Yeah. Because later on, when different facts emerge that weren't available to us, or later on when circumstances change, they're going to go, how could you do that? Well, at the time, it was a very solid choice. Yeah, at the time we all agreed, right? At the time we made caucus with other people, some of whom agreed with us and some of whom did not, right? Yeah. All are welcome. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to kind of cuddle the media, too, and help them to visualize what the goal is. And then they go, oh, yeah, well, you know, they're busy. And if you can make it simple, they will report it for you in the manner that you've stated it, which is wonderful because that's what you want. I always provide the media with press releases and things. I don't know if it's even called that anymore. But something that they can copy from and therefore don't have to work too hard on it and really, think about the various visualizations and like that. Don't make the media visualize. Show them what you've got and tell them why you think it's a good choice. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, we're talking about how to visualize, but also I'm thinking about what people are saying about how do they visualize. That has to go with preconceptions. And let's talk about, should we talk about that before empathy? Let's go to how to visualize. Because what we're going to do is we're going to think about the practical impact of our actions and decisions. The practical impact of our actions and decisions. And there's lots, right? So how are we going to do this? We've now gotten the idea that we should think ahead, that we should think up contingency plans, that we should think about what other people are thinking. That's empathy, right? That's how you visualize. Because remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yes. Very important to remember that, because people go, empathy, I don't agree with him. Mm-mm. You don't have to agree, you have to understand. In order to get this understanding, yes, we are going to break out our 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? They get to the bottom of it. Now, do you ask them all in that order? Not necessarily. Do you ask them all at once? Not necessarily. Do you, in some form, ask all of them? Yep, you do. Because you want to know the answers. And people want to know the answers from you, too, about your leadership. See, it goes both ways. They have to have an answer. Mm-hmm. It goes to the participants who like to know that their viewpoints are really thought of and that we're really in the same team. We're really working on it, right? It goes to our employer, who we need to understand. We need to understand why, who recommended it, who recommended us maybe. What do you want? What do you want? I told you, if they can't answer that question, we're going to have to dig deep. We're going to have to get that answered before I start being a leader of anything. Who, what, where did you hear it, and where would you like it to go in the future? When? Do we have a timeline? Do we have a deadline? And why? What's the agenda? Why do you want this? Sometimes it's not, why is not obvious. And it's one of the things I want to know, because I can kind of, well, steer is a funny word, but I can kind of help the groups to go a certain way if that's your agenda as an employer, right? Yeah. So let's all think about each other. Mm-hmm. Who else is in that group of the empathy? How about the opposition? Let's understand why they are the opposition. Maybe we're not as far apart as we think. Sometimes you'd be surprised. It's more theoretical than it is real, but somebody doesn't want to lose their leadership position. Ah, now we're getting to something that we have to think about, right? Who is it that's in charge? And do they want to fold into my group? Well, no. Maybe the participants would be willing, because quite frankly, we're better. But the leader doesn't want to become a participant. The leader is fighting because he or she wants to continue to be leader. It's prestigious. It's money. It's a job. I don't know what it is, but we're going to find out. How come? Because maybe we can accommodate it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about who is in the empathy group? How about those who are invisible participants, right? Yeah, Recipe for Peace now calls them that. They're the people that are nice enough to be willing to tell us things, like an expert, right? And they would like to see whatever change it is that we are instituting. But they don't, and they have information that we can really use before we go off on the embark on the wrong path. But they don't want their name to be used. They don't want to be known. Yeah, no, it is not because they've done something illegal, because I don't like illegal. It is usually because they wish to remain anonymous because they are in good with the present power structure. They've got a job that depends on the good graces of somebody that we're about to go up against, right? Yeah. No, we will never divulge who our invisible participant is because it will ruin our reputation. Yes, ruin it. But they tell you stuff that you want to know, like an expert, except better because they're usually on the inside. Mm-hmm. And you need to have a reputation that indicates that you will not tell. Everybody needs to know that even if it's to your advantage, you will not. Your word should always be good. Your word should always be good, right? Yes. Even with the opposition, yes, with everyone. Mm-hmm. Okay, folks are asking what kind of people invisible participants would be. Regular people. They haven't done anything illegal. They've just got an idea that things would be better if there was the change that we're promoting. But they can't come right out and say that because their job will suffer, for example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are saying they want to visualize an impacted person. Well, usually they come out and they tell you. But sometimes, just like you don't know that they exist and they're going to be impacted, they don't know what you exist. They don't know what you're doing. And so you need to go public. You need to tell everybody. And we're going to talk about experts in a minute. That's where your expert comes in. Mm-hmm. Because you've got someone who has impact, unintended consequences. Oh, my goodness. We didn't realize it. Good thing we found out now. Well, it's still easy to fix. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the media finds them. Because the media reports on you, and then the public goes, wait a minute. That impacts me unfavorably. Because they don't show up if it impacts them favorably. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about our preconceptions for a second. When we have empathy and understanding, let's really think about our own preconceptions, right? Our own biases. I know that's not a very popular term, but that's what they are, our own biases. We have some. They are, but you must be aware of them, and you are the impartial third party. You must not let them impact your negotiations. How you feel privately about someone should make no difference, right? And if you can't help that, you should recuse yourself because you're going to taint the process. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are two kinds, kind of preconceptions. They're the personal ones that you've learned from experience. That's something that you've actually seen. And then there are the ones that come because someone told you so. Someone who you respect. Someone who you really think knows stuff. Someone maybe even in your childhood because it was part of your culture, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that corporations, businesses, organizations have cultures too. Yeah, corporate culture is not just a little buzzword. It's a real thing. So let's put aside, let's have everybody think about their preconceptions. A lot of people don't realize they have some, right? I don't have any. Well, we're not going to make you say them out loud, but everybody's got some, including me. And let's research all sides, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to need to make a real effort to be inclusive of all, right? Real effort. Yes, we're going to research all sides. I'm thinking about role play. R-O-L-E. A lot of you have seen me do it at a seminar or workshop. And it is true that I do think it's valuable to take someone else's side in the role playing, because that's the idea of it, to argue someone else's argument so you can understand it better and everybody can see it better. A lot of times people are kind of visual learners, and a lot of you remember the role play very favorably. I like it a lot in teaching, in seminars, in workshops. In real life, it has to be used carefully because people are invested in their role, and you don't want to insult them by being too good at being the opposite, right? Yeah, it's kind of funny. I shy away from it in real life, although we use it extensively in the workshops and seminars, because I've noticed that people take offense. They know it's role play. They know it like that, but people take offense. Use role play in the real world with caution. In the academic world, it's a good teaching tool, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, you do need to research all the sides. Remember, in today's fabulous day of internet, you can pretty much find a group for anything that you've kind of like, if you know what I mean. No, we're going, and then you can stop there, right? Look, this validates us. Yeah, let's see the other side too. Let's see all of it, because if you just do it validates you, that's nice, but we won't understand all the issues. Mm-hmm. Yes. The last thing we're going to talk about, I think we're going to have time for one recipe. I know you guys like them. The last thing we're going to talk about is the seeking of experts. As I said earlier in the show, I think, I like to call in experts, maybe even more than one, competing ones, just to run it past them, what we're about to do, to see if that's got unintended consequences, because we didn't know to ask about them. We didn't know to know them. It never occurred to us. That's why they're unintended, right? Yeah. So we need to get somebody to look this over and tell us if there's something about it that's really not going to be a good idea. Or maybe they can tweak it and make it a better idea. I've seen that too. Mm-hmm. Now, people are asking, who should we choose as an expert? It's a very valid question. I have a preference for people with experience as my expert, because they have a real-life opinion about what should be done. One of my favorite types of expert is somebody who has failed, right? Yeah, because they can tell us what not to do. They can give us warning, right? Yeah. And they are still interested in having a successful outcome. The reason why they failed is something that we'd like to analyze too, right? And so we have the expert tell us how come that didn't work out, right? Yeah. And then we judge whether or not that's a justification, and we call in more experts. I like people that have done it before. Now, if you're going to actually, and sometimes these people will be nice enough to volunteer their time and give an opinion over the phone or over Skype or something. And nowadays there's lots of experts on the internet, right? You can look up what people say, people who are respected in their field. That's what an expert is. I also like, if you're going to present to the employer, or to the media, because the media has this too. If you're going to have your expert talk to the media and maybe even be the spokesperson, credentials do look nice, and they are somewhat impressive. Now, I am not that impressed by credentials because I've met some really dumb people with some really fabulous credentials, but they had no practical street smarts. They didn't have any common sense, which is not very common in case you care, and they didn't understand how to come to a practical conclusion. They were all theory. That's nice. I don't have any against degrees. I have 2 doctorates in law myself. But the media, the employer, kind of likes people with a degree. So you can have both kinds. Remember the competing experts? They could even be on the same side. But maybe our spokesperson for the group should be an expert with, yeah, kind of gravitas. I know that that's kind of, well, it's real life. Somebody who's got nice credentials will be taken more seriously by the public, maybe by the employer, right, than someone who doesn't but has done it, right? Yeah. I like both. I especially like the ones that are quite articulate because they're excellent in front of the media. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, a good expert will indeed visualize the results. Visualize how you were accommodated their expert opinion, right? Yeah. What you did to make it better. Yes. Yes, people are talking about experts in their personal lives too. And what we're going to do is we're going to deal with the expert, and we're going to visualize what it is that they're going to do for us to get us to the successful outcome. Yeah, let's visualize that. Let's really think about it. Pardon me. Voice is going in and out. Hang on. Pardon me. And took a little sip of water again. Now you know it's a live show. There's pauses while I read what people are saying, and there's drinking of water and like that. There have been times where I've actually lost my voice, which is really dumb. I'm like, I have to leave the show early now. But I try not to do that. So, yes, the way to deal with the expert is to get the expert to visualize also, because they need to understand what the result is that we think we've got, what we're about to do, and they need to visualize the impact of that result and whether or not there's a better way of doing it, which is really what we want to know. We've gotten this far. Are we on the right track? You could call them in a little bit earlier. Or now that we have made our decision, what will the consequences be? Let's visualize that. And are there some sort of people, some sort of, I don't know, you can impact, in the United States, you can impact birds and things that have habitats. Is there some sort of unexpected, unintended consequence that we need you to tell us about, right? We need you to look at it. Because that's why you bring in an expert. Mm-hmm. Because they visualize the future, what will happen if you do this. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, the unintended consequence. Quite a few people are talking about different kinds of unintended consequences. Oftentimes when a law is changed, you have that because you do have people who are satisfied with the law. They thought it was a good idea, whatever it was, and they flourished under it. There's nothing wrong with that, but you have to understand it, and that's where the empathy comes in. So we're going to call everybody in. We're going to have some understanding. We're going to visualize as leader ourselves, but also with the others so that we can reach a conclusion as to what success looks like, right? So that we can get together on it. And really, it's important to get as many people on the team as many people acting with enthusiasm in the same direction as possible, because otherwise you're not going to reach your successful outcome. You're going to have a stalemate. You're going to have nothing got done. And, you know, I'm really big on being practical, and I'm really getting things done and really, really have them, have everyone work together in harmony so that they can pull out a lot. And it's like a kitchen, so they can create a lot of stuff together and not be at odds, right? For this, we're going to do some networking because it gets us all together, right? We're going to have to talk to each other, even if we're very different. I explain this to my people sometimes because I can see that they've got preconceived notions about this type of person that they're dealing with, right? So they have bigotry, let's face it. And I explain, since it's not my job to cure you of your lifelong bigotry, but my job is to get you to work together for these issues at this point in time with this goal in mind, right? Right. That's my job. And I explain this to people. I explain that we have to get along at this time for these issues at this moment. And then as soon as we get done, we don't need to see each other again. Yeah, the faster done, the faster gone. Seems to be an extreme surprise to people. And you'd be surprised years later when something else comes up and they need to deal with that kind of person again. And believe me, they still think that. And on both sides, probably. They actually seek out their prior teammate from one of my negotiations because they remember that they could deal with them. I still think that about some sort of a group, but this person is different than the norm. See how I've just validated some sort of horrible bigotry? But that's how you have to approach it. These people are different than the norm. You can go back to hating. I can't help it. Hopefully we'll have changed your mind. But these people are against the norm, and they're better. We can deal with them. We'll find that out during networking. We're going to have food, right? Right? Oh, I left a little bit of time for the recipes. Are you proud? Because usually I don't do them, and you're all like, what happened to the recipe? I'm like, oh, we're getting there, maybe. Yes, we're going to do the safe one, which has been hanging around forever. But I'm going to make my little speech beforehand. Yes, you all expect this. But there's new people also. Welcome to everybody, by the way. Thank you all for being there. You want to find this word recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. My people tell me that I don't repeat that enough during the show. But, you know, we have such an interesting discussion. I'm going to break in and say that little sentence. You'll find us. And we'll be glad, yes. If you're going to have food, and you are, you need to take a survey. You need to ask if anybody has any prohibitions to food, is allergic to something, has something they don't eat. We don't want anybody to not have a nice time. Also, when you bring the food, you're going to ask people to come with a list. What is in it? Is it delicious? But what is in it? Because I want to run my eye down the list and see if I can eat it. Right? Right. Now, sometimes we have an adventure recipe. An adventure recipe does not mean that somebody in the room can't eat it because we've taken our survey, right? It just means that it's a little more unusual for that area. In my area, a curry is unusual. It's an adventure recipe. But this is an international show. In your area, that may be comfort food that everybody eats every day. So you have to decide. Let's do the safe recipe first. I don't know we're going to get to both of them. We might. It's baked Italian chicken pasta. Oh, so delicious. Very popular. It is the safe recipe because if you look down the list, it doesn't have pork or wine or something, but it has a lot of stuff. So that's why we need the list. Some people might be allergic to cheese or something, and if you know that, of course you're not going to use it. This, I hesitate to say this, but it's one of my favorite recipes because if you're very careful and you've refrigerated properly, right, because I don't want you to make anybody sick, which is why I hate to say this, you can use leftover protein, chicken, turkey, ham, which makes an adventure recipe because it's pork, right? But it's you need a couple of pounds of cooked chicken. I'm going to use chicken on this when we talk about it, or turkey or something. A lot of times we've got that kind of leftover from an event, and you could, yeah, use it if it's been carefully stored. If not, hey, we're going to do it. So let's have a couple pounds of rotini. We're going to cook it and drain it and like that. Use something like that, bow tie rotini, something, what do they call that, the rigatoni, right? Something that is not long and sloppy, because otherwise you're going to have tongs, and it's messy to get spaghetti or fettuccine or something to the plate. This way you've got good portion control. You've got a nice big slotted spoon, or maybe even not a slotted spoon. You've got a big spoon, and people can handle it. If they take a spoonful, they go, God, that's delicious, and they want six more spoonfuls, they can handle it without making a mess. They can also not make a mess when they're eating it. It's just easier. I never approve of using any kind of long, thin, dangly pasta. So let's have I like a lot of pasta. Let's have a couple of pounds of pasta that we're going to cook al dente and set aside, right? Let's have 2 to 3 pounds, a lot of cooked chicken. And if it's not cooked, we of course are going to cook it, right? Either way, we're going to take the chunks of chicken. They might be pre-cooked, they might be raw. We're going to mix them with the Italian seasoning and coat them, just because it adds a little bit of flavor. I like a little, if they're cooked already, I like to add some, this is what I really do. I take a Ziploc baggie, right? You've all got plastic disposable bags, even though this is, in this country it's called a Ziploc. But some sort of a plastic bag with a that I can roll over and close. You don't have to have a lock even, you can just turn it over. And I stick, if it's cooked chicken, I stick the cooked chicken in there with some olive oil and some Cajun seasoning, and I just mush it all around and let it stand. You can do this in a bowl too, but it makes a messy bowl. But you just get some moistness and some seasoning on the chicken. If it's raw, we're going to coat it just like that, and then we're gonna cook it, right? Yeah, until it's no longer pink and set it aside. But either way, you've got a nice bowl of chicken. You want to do the oil and the Cajun, then the Italian seasoning in the bowl. Very well, put it all in a bowl, make nice chunks, and oil, seasoning, mush it all around, let it sit there, because we're working on the rest of the stuff. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to cook the pasta, separate also. So we've got our chicken, or whatever. Even with the ham, I do this, with the turkey, whatever. And we've got the pasta. And we could thicken with a little bit of all-purpose flour. That would be nice. Let's have about 3 tablespoons. Mm-hmm. Let's have, depending on how you like it. I like Italian seasoning because it is, I like the kind that's not salted. You know, people notice that I don't use a lot of salt in my cooking. I do not, I have it on the side. I have it on the counter where the food is. You want salt, put salt on it. But I tend to use very little salt, and I don't put things like jalapenos in because that's personal taste. But they're on the side. It's all right. Let's have 3 tablespoons of a nice Italian seasoning. Something that's delicious, has the usual, right? And it's kind of finely chopped, I guess you would call it. But I don't like it with salt. Let's have a little bit of oil because we're going to use it on the chicken. We already explained that. 2 cups of heavy cream. No, you cannot use milk. No. 2 cups of shredded cheddar and Monterey Jack. Let's have a little more than 2 cups. Let's have 2.5 cups. I'll blend them together. So that's like a cup, cup and a half. I like a lot of cheese. Of Monterey Jack and a cup and a half of shredded cheddar. If you use only cheddar, it'll be a little bit bitter. Let's have a whole bunch of tomatoes. If you're going to use a can, a big can of diced tomatoes. I'm going to use a can. If you want, you can chop them up. Strain it really well. And maybe some scallions for the top just to look pretty, but I prefer parsley, personally speaking. Let's preheat the oven to 350, right? Mm-hmm. We've got the chicken. We've made it. We've either made it in the oil with the seasoning and like that, or we added the seasoning and the oil to the cooked, but it's all cooked, right? Now we've got both those things aside, the cooked pasta and the chicken. Now, in a medium saucepan, bigger than medium, bring the cream to a boil over lowish heat, like medium heat. Give it a stir occasionally because otherwise you'll get that crud on the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's now hot cream, right? It's boiled. So now we're going to whisk in a cup of the cheese, half the cheese, right? And a tablespoon of seasoning. And we're going to whisk it until it's nice and smooth. What you've made is you've made Italian cream sauce. Oh, yummy. We've now got we're going to combine everything. We're going to combine the cooked pasta, the cooked chicken, the cream mixture with the cheese and stuff. I'm going to call it cheese sauce. The tomatoes. And the rest of the cheese, which we're going to work in because it makes it deliciously cheesy. I use a big pot for the cheese sauce. I throw everything in. I don't like to make too many dishes. We've now got a yummy thing that we could just eat. But it actually will be better first of all, we need to heat it through. We've got cold chicken because it's been sitting outside. We've got cold pasta for the same reason. Bake it. Take the whole thing, put it in a greased big baking dish, stick in the oven. I put a little extra cheese on the top. Yum, 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 yum. 20 minutes, 25 minutes in the 350, right? Until it's all boiling, and it's all bubbling, and it's all hot and yummy. Before you serve it, give it a little bit of, let it sit for about a minute just because it's terrible hot and it'll make it settle better. Yeah, put the rest of the cheese on like, you want it to melt and not burn is the key to it. I like to do it like 5 minutes before I'm going to take it out. Because once you take it out, it's not quite hot enough and you get little raw pieces. Yummy. Everybody loves it. It smells really good in the room if you've got the facilities to bring it all prepped, because you can see that it really would be brought all prepped, and stick it in an oven for 20 minutes, because then people really go, oh, Jesus, smells good. What's that? Yeah. Yes, I serve all kinds of, there are all kinds of condiments on the side, because people are trying to convince me to put spicier things in. No. And if you want something like hot sauce, put it on the side. Don't put it in because people like me don't like it. I guess that's why. I guess I'm not much of a spice eater. You kind of prefer what you grew up with, and I grew up with not very spicy food. And I think it's interesting. But I'd prefer to have minimal in my dish and be able to take a little bit of each spicy condiment and try it with my dish so I can experience it and then go, oh, okay, that was past the water, nice. Yeah, but that's just me. But, yes, I truly recommend it, depending on your group, of course. Maybe they all know that they really like hot sauce. Put it aside. Yes. My friends, we are out of time. Yes. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. the website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on the website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.